Before I finish the last few lines of the Masechet, as we do every year, I'd like to just offer a brief idea that relates to Inyanei Purim, and I think it also very much relates to this incredible special event that we have now regularly in our shul. And I'd like to take a step back, if I could, turning not towards tomorrow, but turning towards the other day, and that is Parshas Zachor, and share with you an idea which I think very much it animates Avodas Hashem in general, but I think, as we'll see in a moment, is something that comes out of the idea of Zechiras Amalek, and I think very much speaks to this event that we're having this evening, this wonderful Siyum. Even though Amalek only attacked us once, but the Torah records the attack twice. First in Parshas B'Shalach, when it actually happened, and then in Parshas Kitetze, when Moshe is doing the 40-year retrospective, he mentions that it happened. And in fact, it's the retrospective in Parshas Kitetze, which we read on Parshas Zachor. Tomorrow we'll read from B'Shalach. And the very fact that they're not the same Kriya is, in fact, the source of a famous Machlokas Aposkim. Could one b'dieved rely on the Kriya of B'Shalach per morning in order to be Yotze the mitzvah of Zechira? And many Poskim say no, because it really isn't the same thing. But either way, it's only one episode. They only attacked us once. It was discussed when it happened. And then there's the retrospective that Moshe offers. What is striking is that Chazal, in both places, offer a mushal to describe and to convey what is the deeper message of the attack on Amalek. And yet, even though this is the same episode in both places, they only attacked once, it only happened once, Chazal offer two different mushalim, which seem to be unnecessary. Once you have one, what do you need the other one for? In Parshas B'Shalach, well, I'll start the other way. In Parshas Kisetze, which is what we read on Shabbos, is the more famous mushal of the boiling hot water. So boiling hot that no one would even stick their toe in it. And yet, someone, Meshugana, jumps in, scalds his whole body, but as a result, the whole water is cooled off. What's the message what our Chazal are trying to convey? The Nimshal is that when we came out of Egypt, we were hot. We were boiling. No one would have dared touch us. Eser Makot, Kriyas Yamsuf, who's going to mess with the Jews? And then all of a sudden, Amalek came, and they got scalded, they got a patch, they got defeated, but they cooled us off. And as a result, no one was scared of us. And in essence, what Chazal are saying is something very powerful. That every single attack, whether it's in the time of Tanakh, or all of Jewish history, including just in the last few weeks, Rahman al-Atslan, every terrorist attack, every anti-Semite, everything is on the Cheshbon of Amalek. If they hadn't attacked us in the Midbar, none of this would have happened. And that's the level of their evil. Not only that they attacked us unnecessarily and unprovoked, but they also enabled all future and subsequent attacks. That's one very famous mushal. Who doesn't know the mushal of the boiling hot water? However, in Parshas B'Shalach, Rashi quotes from Chazal a completely different mashal, less well known, of the father who's carrying his son on his shoulders. He's going on a business trip. Let's have some father-son bonding. Come with me. And the son is on his father's shoulders, and he can see all sorts of things that he would not otherwise be able to see, because he's at great heights. And in the distance, he sees a toy store. Abba, can you get me a toy? Of course. A few minutes later, he sees a candy store. Abba, can you get me a candy? Of course. And then the Medrash continues that time and time again, the boy is asking his father for things, and the father keeps on giving it to him. But as we know from our own children, if you spoil your children, they will start taking you for granted. And says the mashal, the boy was so used to this great, comfortable seat he had and getting everything he wanted, he forgot that he was even on his father's shoulders to begin with. Ad kenei kach, that a few minutes later he sees someone coming in the opposite direction. He says to him, excuse me for a second, have you seen my father? And of course the father is upset, enraged. Here I am carrying you the whole time, giving you time and time again. You don't even remember that I'm here. Says the Medrash, he takes his son and says, you can walk yourself. But now the boy is not only is he not comfortable, not only is he can't just be resting, he's also not protected, he's vulnerable. Says the Medrash, right after that, a wild dog attacks him. What are Chazal trying to convey? You go to Parshas B'Shalach, the very first pasuk, right before, the pasuk right before Amalek attacks, the Jewish people are doing what we do best. They're complaining. Complaining that we have no water. And this time they don't just complain. They let their complaints and their frustration get the better of them. And they say something they should never have said. They even question if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was even existing. Did he forget about him? Did he didn't exist? So say Chazal, because they forgot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was even there. How could you forget? Hashem, Avinu Shebashamayim, has been carrying us. And not just on his shoulders. He carried us through Egypt. He carried us through the Yamsuf. And now you don't even remember that he's there. You forget he's there. Hashem says, you're on your own. The very next pasuk, we're attacked. In other words, Chazal sees it's not a coincidence that one pasuk comes before the other. It was a smichut. Why, if there's only one story, one attack by Amalek, why do Chazal need to give completely different, two different Mishalim? So in his Sefer, Sichas Minchas Asher, Rav Asher Weiss points out a very simple but very profound lesson. And that is that these aren't just two different stories, but two different messages with different focuses. Yes, it's true. If we think about the Mashal with the boiling water, clearly the message, the focus of that Mashal is the evil of Amalek. And it's true. If we look at what happened to us, we can blame other people. Sometimes other people are to blame. Amalek is to blame. They're responsible. There was no reason. They attacked us unnecessarily. They weren't provoked. It was evil. And the fact that there are Goyim who hate us, who attack us unnecessarily, that there are double standards, that there's anti-Semitism, nachon, it's not new, and it's not unfounded. It's true, and we have to do everything we can when we see people who are treating us with double standards, not being fair to the Jewish people, point it out. Fight back, whether it's with a strong military or through donations to politicians who are supportive, whatever the different ways you can fight back on anti-Semitism and enemies of the Jewish people, we have to point that out. However, there's another message. The other message is the mashal of the father and the son. There the focus isn't on Amalek at all. It's not looking outward, but looking inward. Saying ultimately, it's our responsibility. We fell short. If we had not done something wrong, if we had not committed a sin, a grievous sin of forgetting Hashem, even doubting His existence, if we had been what we should have been, it never would have happened. We would have been impervious, totally protected, no matter what Amalek would have done. They would have had no chance against us. Ultimately, B'sheli Hasar Hazeh, as Yonah says, the responsibility is with us. And if Usher adds one more point, which is so subtle, but it's really the genius of the whole piece, which is that it's not just that Chazal give two different Mishalim, it's not a coincidence in what order they present them. It's true that sometimes there are anti-Semites who treat us unfairly and we have to point that out. But that's only in Kisetse. That's only in Devarim. When did that take place? 40 years later. But in the moment that it actually happened, what's a Jew's first instinct, the first response? Not to blame other people. In B'Shalach, when the event happens, we don't look for excuses. First, we turn inward. We accept personal responsibility. Yes, other people let us down. Yes, other people have done something wrong. But what could we have done better? Where did we fall short? What mistakes did we make? That has to be a Jew's first response. Then, and only then, can you look outward and say, well, maybe other people contributed too, and what can we do against them? And the lesson, I think, that's so powerful and so important that he's conveying to us, of course, is that of Kabbalas Achrayas, of taking responsibility. And I would like to expand on this just for another moment, because I think in the message I'd like to convey to you, I think very much connects to this idea, which is to say, Kabbalas Achrayas is a humongously important topic. And it's not only a response to bad events, whether we're attacked, how do we blame? Do we look outward or inward? If we fall short ourselves, the whole tshuva phenomenon is premised on not making excuses, but responding with responsibility. But that's all Kabbalas Achrayas as a reaction, retroact after the fact. But the broader point is that a Jew and any responsible human being has to have Achrayas not just reactively, but proactively. Has to see when there are things that need to be done, when there are things that have to happen in their own life, things maybe not being what you want. It's always easy to look outside to blame others. But the first responsibility is to say, I'll have to try to do what I can to fix it. In every person's life, there are things you'd want to get done, you'd want to have different. Do you wait for other people to take care of it, or do you work on it yourself? And of course, this is true, if it's true in a personal life, Kavachomer ben Benoshel Kavachomer is true in the life of Am Yisrael, is true in the life of every community. Every incredible movement throughout the history of Am Yisrael, every incredible yeshiva, every incredible institution, every wonderful shul, including this one, every one of them has been written with the exact same story. That there was a person or people who saw there was something that needed to be done and didn't say, I'll let someone else take care of it. Which is, of course, the more common and typical response. But there were people or persons who said, yes, there's a need for a shul, there's a need for a yeshiva, there's a need, whatever there's a need for, Bisheli, I'll take care of it. I'll take responsibility. The community needs a shul. The community needs a program. If the shul needs this, I'll do it. That's what real Kabbalah Zachariah is. It's not just reacting to problems. It's proactively, not just waiting around for other people to do things, but to take responsibility. If everyone is waiting around to do things, everything in our community and every other community and throughout Jewish history, none of it would have happened. It only happens because there were those select few people who said, I'm going to take responsibility. And I want to conclude by applying this in two ways to what we're doing tonight. Number one is, and most immediately and obviously, that all of us owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to all of the volunteers and the leaders of the shul, and I repeat myself, because every one of the leaders of the shul are all volunteers. And every one of them are your friends and your neighbors who are having less time for their own careers and less time for their friends and less time for their wives and less time for their family because they're volunteering and helping the shul. And they also have other things that they'd want to be doing. They also have more time they'd want to spend on their job and make even more, or more time with their families, or more time for their own learning, or whatever the case may be. But there have been, since the beginning of the shul and continuing Baruch Hashem now, a few people who have stepped up and said, we'll take responsibility. We're willing to volunteer to help the shul. And we all owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to them in general, and specifically for this event tonight. There are so many people led by our indefatigable president, Daniel Chambray, who has done incredible work. You'll be shocked to know he's sweating now. Shocking, I know.
He's always sweating.
They are exactly like we planned. Anyway, and what's amazing is not only that Daniel does everything for the shul, but I heard a rumor he's busy this week. It's a very, very busy week. Because he's even making a bar mitzvah. And despite the fact that he has family in and making a bar mitzvah, he's still running around worrying about the Megillah readings and the Minyanim and the Suda. And he is an example. He's not the only example. There's other volunteers also. But as the leader of the shul and our president, we owe him all a tremendous debt of gratitude in general, and especially for what he's doing tonight. Last but not least, and maybe the most important thing, if we're coming together for a siyum, then every one of us have to think about this lesson and how it relates to us and our own personal commitment to Talmud Torah. Every one of us learn. And every one of us could be learning more. We could have more time with chavrusas, more time learning on our own, more time coming to the rabbi shurim, just saying. There's more things that we could be doing. And I'm sure we all have legitimate excuses why we don't go to this year or to that year or have this chavrusa or that chavrusa. And they're legitimate. I'm not being facetious. They're legitimate excuses. But in the end, they're still just excuses. And you're still not learning as much as you could be. And instead of looking outward to blame the Amaleks in our life, our first response has to be, what could we be doing better? How could we squeeze even 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day or a week out to find more time to learn? The holiday of Purim, the essence we know, Chazal tells us, is Hadar Kibluha. It's not just a salvation. We're not saved for no purpose. Just to be alive is not the goal. We were saved so that we could have a Kabbalah Satorah Mitoch Ava and to increase and deepen the level. There was an enhancement above what happened on Har Sinai. It was even better in the time of Mordechai and Esther. Which means that every year on Purim, there has to be a personal and a communal Kabbalah Satorah. How can we recommit ourselves, Mitoch Ava, to learning even more, to going to even more Shurim, to having more Chavrusas, to listening to more Shurim on your phone when you're on your way to work, whatever the case may be. There are so many ways we can find time and more opportunities to learn. And that has to be the lesson that comes out. As a shul, by taking on the siyum, we're making a statement about this is important to us, and that Purim is not just about the fun and the revelry, but also about the Hadar Kibluha. But ultimately, it really comes down to each and every one of us. Where can we find more time, more commitment to learn? So I give all of us not only a charge, but hopefully a tefillah and a bracha. We should have a wonderful simcha dik filled next 24 hours. We should enjoy Purim, Kamo Shetzarich, as Chazal enjoin us too, with our children, with our spouses, with our families, with our friends. This is all part of the Avodas Hashem of Purim, but also should include, hopefully, a very important and significant personal Kabbalah, so that hopefully we can come out of this Purim with increased Avas HaTorah and increased commitment to Talmud Torah.